Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend, our confidant, Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, gents? Sitting here in picturesque Cleveland, looking out my hotel room, listening to Joe Rex Road say, I don't want to start stuff, but
with all due respect,
with all due respect, Joe doesn't want to speculate, but then he speculates. That's my favorite.
When's the last time you were home? Do you remember what home is?
August 23rd was the last time I was home. This is team 18, and I'm definitely getting the. So, when are you going to come home? When does this end exactly? When does the money run out? So, yeah, I'm reassessing my future plans after this stuff, so we'll see.
So, Charles, let's start on the Brandon Ayuk front. We talked a little bit about it last week, but still no absolute resolution there. What's the latest on that front, and how do you see this thing ultimately playing out?
Well, so interestingly, I'm kind of in the wheelhouse of the Ayuk. I went through Niners camp early, and I actually just went through Steelers camp recently. And then, you know, obviously I'm here in Cleveland, and I can tell you this, the reports of what was offered by Cleveland are 100% accurate. You know, Amari Cooper, a second round pick. And then it was, I think it was reported it was a fifth. It was actually a swap of a fourth and a sixth that would have come out to fifth round value for the 49ers. So, you know, that was engineered by the Browns. I think the money was where Ayuk would have wanted it. He just didn't want to be there. And so ultimately that's why that never got off the ground. The reports of the Pittsburgh deal that's, you know, on the table, squared, done, that's correct. The deal that's on the table from the Steelers does not include a wide receiver. It's draft picks, but it is a package that the 49ers would accept. But what's going on right now is the Niners are, I believe, they're running a parallel track right now with Brandon Ayuk. And we talked about this last week where I told you I think they're, you know, ultimately what they wanted to do is let him get out there, sort of see what was out there, and then try to get a deal done. I still think that is a priority for them. However, what you do is you have to set up a plan B for yourself. And I think for the 49ers, it's okay. Look, if we can't get this contract done, we need to figure out if we do the deal with the Steelers, we need a wide receiver. We cannot exit this without a wide receiver. So effectively what they would want to do is take those picks and shop them around the NFL and see, okay, what veteran wide receiver out here is available for us if we use these Steelers picks, and is there a guy that, you know, fits the Ayuk role or fits what we need from this, you know, receiver slot that's now going to be opened up, who then we can engineer a trade for. So people are like, why, what's this dead period, and why is this, you know, all of a sudden just gone quiet? And it really has, even for all the teams involved. It's like the Niners right now are holding everything, and, you know, they're just not communicating with anyone. And I think in terms of like who's involved with the trade, and I think that's because they're trying to figure out, is there a deal for us to get done? How close are we? And if not, can we go get another wide receiver with the compensation we get back from the Steelers? So that's where they're at right now. I'll let people speculate on it. It's funny. You call around and you try to figure out across the league, like, okay, what veterans are available, not named Devontae Adams? Like who else, who's the obvious not available receiver? And, you know, I've come up with a few, but then you reach out to the teams and you just hear, we're not trading them. We're not trading this guy. This guy's not getting traded. So not sure what other veterans are necessarily out there available right now, but, I think that's what's going on right now. The Niners are basically giving themselves out if they can't get the deal done with Ayuk.
Okay, so you've seen most of these rookies now. I know everyone's gaga about Caleb Williams and his preseason debut, but you've seen most of these rookies. So I guess first of all, Charles, you know, the big impressions that hit you, but also Minnesota loses their rookie. J.J. McCarthy, that's a tough one for them. So they got Sam Darnold. Should Minnesota go after Ryan Tannehill?
I mean, they need a backup. You know, that there's no doubt they're signing a backup. I mean, Darnold.
But he's better than Darnold. He'd be their starter.
Nah, he doesn't know the offense, Joe. Like, he doesn't. That offense, you got to have somebody. Like, they're not playing around. They want to compete this year.
Smart.
And he's
very intelligent.
It took Kirk 2 years to really master that offense. You know, with O'Connell, and unfortunately in the midst of his second year, he suffers in terms of with Kevin, suffers the Achilles injury. But yeah, no, they can't. They're not going to get anybody to be their starter. Like, Darnold is their starter.
So they're going to suck. Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
We'll see. They don't think so. You know, going through there and talking to them, and that was when JJ was healthy. Their intent at that time, and they were very open about it with me, was, We hope, you know, that we have an opportunity to sit JJ as long as possible and develop him, and we hope that Darnold has, you know, kind of a Geno Smith run in him, that he's been through some bad scenarios. And it was funny, because when you listen to him sort of lay out what Darnold had been through, who he had been with, they were like, tell me the good situation. Like, explain to me the good coaching situation, the good team situation. What was that? And I had a hard time. And they're like, okay, well, you know, we feel like he got better when he got with Kyle Shanahan. So, and he got into this offense. I think there's belief in him, not long-term, but in terms of what's happening this season. This is an ideal. They wanted, obviously, to get to McCarthy, I think, at some point this year. But it's not devastating from the standpoint of they were looking at seriously starting McCarthy, you know, when the season. I think the biggest devastation for them is that McCarthy went out there in a preseason game, threw a pick, looked bad, and then quickly improved over the course of the game. And from a confidence standpoint, from a read standpoint, you know, pretty much everything he did in that preseason game, as he went along, he got a lot better. And that's exactly what they want to see. And now they're going to lose all those snaps. So that's tough. I mean, in terms of the other rookies, the only guy I haven't seen is Caleb. I watched his preseason game, but live I've seen everybody else. I think maybe the one – I think we talked about, you know, the Broncos and Knicks and what a great fit that is for Sean. And I think that's why Peyton is so relaxed this preseason, is because he knows he's got his guy. The one that I thought was kind of funny was just seeing Jaden Daniels. I was in camp with them, and then I was in New Jersey for the game against the Jets, and he checked out of – he had a screen that they had called. And Jaden sees he's a packed box, and he says, no, I'm going to go ahead and change this play. He was not authorized to change the play because they were starting like a third string guard at tackle. And you know, they were like, look, we're not calling anything that's going to put him in any jeopardy of getting hit. He had just come out of joint practices with the Jets. They were very impressed by him. I didn't even have to bring up his name. And the Jets were like, hey, number 5 with Washington is really good. So he checks out his play, throws a go ball deep to Deami Brown, perfect ball, beautiful completion. It was like a 42-yard completion. So I go through camp afterward, and I'm talking like everybody in the organization. And it's basically like, yeah, we talked to him about that. We were like, it's great that worked. Don't ever do that again. Like, you can never, ever do that in that scenario. We're calling that play for a reason. And he knew during the game, he knew he wasn't supposed to do it. He did it anyway. And then he turned to the sideline. I don't know if there was really ever a good shot of it, but he turned to the sideline after the completion, grinning like, I know I'm going to get in trouble for this because I just did something I wasn't supposed to do. I was entertained by it. I think it is something that showcases his competitive nature, but it also showcases how worried I think the Commanders are about making sure they keep him safe behind that offensive line. So all the rookies, I'll say this about that class, that first round class, so far they've all shown like positives. Like, you're like, oh, you see flashes. You know, Drake May is the one where you're a little nervous, but I still think he hasn't gotten enough time to really showcase some of the concern that I think is coming out of there. But there's been upside, and it was a super long answer. One quick conversation I had with a GM where I said, this doesn't look like, at least in the early going, it's more positive than the 2021 class that had all those, you know, busts. And his GM was just like, I'm telling you, he's like, I swear that class was ruined by COVID. He was like, we had such a hard time getting to know the players that were getting selected. And he was like, and it wasn't just quarterbacks. He was like, it was across the board. You had a really hard time getting to know the mentality and the mindset and a lot of the intangibles with players because of COVID. And he was like, that's why I think so many people made such massive mistakes in that draft.
Charles Robinson with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Charles, the Hassan Reddick situation seems very on brand for the New York Jets. Yeah. It feels like if anybody can find a way to screw something up, they do. So they make the trade a few months ago for Hassan Reddick, and now they can't even get him to come inside the building, and they're at a standoff. They've said they're not going to trade him, but he has requested the trade officially. How do you view this situation, and how do you see this one playing out with Hassan Reddick and the Jets?
Well, first off, just from talking to multiple people involved, this, remember, there's really three teams involved because, well, there's two teams involved because the Eagles are sitting there going, well, this is a 2026 pick that we could have graduate into a second rounder from a third rounder. So they have a vested interest, too, in this getting worked out. They need Hassan Reddick on the field for the Jets to meet performance qualifiers that would push that pick up. But I think, number one, it showcases why this ended up being a 2026 pick in the first place. That's way down the road. I think the Jets made the trade knowing we don't have the contract in place that he wants yet. We're going to work on it once we get this deal done, but let's make sure we mitigate the risk by pushing the pick way down the road. I think what I was told, like really just from talking to everybody involved in this thing, what ended up happening was they deal for him. He comes in, he does the press conference, says, you know, positive things. Seems to be like, you know, seems like, okay, they're in the right direction here. Takes his physical, everything's good. When he left the building, that was it. He never came back. He didn't come back for anything in the off-season program, literally nothing. And I think all of a sudden the Jets are sitting there going, wait a minute, like, that's not how this was going to go. Like, that's not how this was supposed to go. Like, we had confidence that we were going to do this deal. He was going to be in for the off-season stuff, and we were going to negotiate, you know, over the course of the off-season, and then if necessary, into training camp to get this deal ultimately on the rails. And then I think once he wasn't showing up, the Jets are like, wait a minute, we didn't trade for a guy to have him hold out. We traded to be able to do a good faith negotiation with him in the building. Now he's not in the building, and you know, we're sitting here and it's become a standoff, you know, that they did not expect. And I think part of the complication for the Jets too is now that once it was clear he was holding out by not showing up to anything, which the guys immediately knew it, the other players immediately knew, like, hey, he's not here for anything. Why? He's not here for the OTA. He's not here for anything we're doing. Is this already a holdout? Is this a trade for a holdout? And you know, the Jets are in the position where they're like, they know there are other guys on the roster who would love to have their deals redone. And they are in the classic position. This is across the NFL. This happens every single year. It's okay. Now what do we do? Because if we give this guy an extension, when he clearly held out, you know, and said, you know, I'm not taking part in anything, what are we going to do inside our own locker room with other individuals who now want deals, but did show up? And who we have not done deals with yet, or future deals, whether it's Sauce Gardner or Breece Hall or whoever else, all these other extensions we got to do, what message are we sending that, hey, all you got to do is hold out and then you get what you want? So, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of an ugly standoff. And I think I'm just telling you from talking to everybody, it feels like it's going to go all the way to the regular season. And then he's going to have to make a decision. It's going to be what I kind of termed a Chris Jones decision, where it's, do I miss a game check? And then we wait and see what the pass rush looks like. And is that where I regain leverage? Because right now he just doesn't have leverage. He's going to continue to be fined $50,000 a day. It's going to be, you know, north of $2 million by the time the season starts. And then we're talking game checks. You know, at some point he's got to make a decision here, and he can't sit out the year because his contract tolls. It's the same deal then in 2025. So not great. It's, you know, a bad spot, I think, especially for the Jets. This is, you know, for this to start the way that it did. But people inside the organization do feel like if they can get him in and you know, work on something with him in the building, that there is a path back from this. But it's certainly not the way they wanted to start it.
On the Titans front, Charles, we've talked a lot about J.C. Latham. I think right now he's looking pretty good out there. But you came across some information from another team about him.
I love how you're tiptoeing up to this.
I want to make sure you can, you know, say what you can say.
This is a lesson, and you can't tell Joe anything about what you hear about.
Hey,
the road,
I could have just blurted it out, you know.
Yeah, I know you could have, but you know, it's supposed to. There's no like friends conversations anymore. Joe's constant like, is this radio content?
Fully in the dark side.
You're like Dawn's yelling at me about cutting the grass. We'll put on the show.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about this before. When you go through, you know, these camps, you end up talking about a multitude of different things. And, you know, you revisit the draft and you talk about a lot of different stuff. And you often get kind of asked, like, where have you been? Who have you seen? Who have you been impressed with? I went through Titans camp. We talked about this. I was really impressed with Latham when I went through Titans camp. And as I was going through, you know, I mentioned to – I was in Eagles camp, and I mentioned to somebody there, you know, hey, I went through Titans, like Latham looks really, really good, really polished. Like he looks like everything, you know, that the people that were high on him thought he would be. And the Eagles, I can say this with confidence because I know it. I mean, this was the top tackle. And in their assessments, when they looked at the tackle class, he was the number one tackle in the class. And, you know, I think that he projected out as having Pro Bowl potential for them, which, you know, it's a big deal. And I think to me in particular, if you're a Titans fan, you have to be excited because the two best offensive line coaches in the NFL are the one you have in Bill Callahan and Jeff Stoutland in Philadelphia he's bar none the best offensive overall developer of offensive linemen in terms of like taking guys with raw skills and turning them into great players. They're not perfect. You know, Andre Dillard's still on the Eagles record but they are at the tippy top of the league when it comes to coaching up offensive linemen and knowing the talent when they see it. And so I'd be pretty psyched if I was a Titans fan knowing that, hey, if there's one other team where I care about their opinion of the guy we took with our first-round pick, it being a tackle, it would be the Eagles. So I thought that was very notable. I mentioned it to Joe, and Joe immediately was like, we got to get that on the show.
And then you just said everything. I thought you had to be like careful, like, well, you know, it was an NFC East team.
Of course, you always are like, you have to tippy toe around this guy. But you know, if my guy at the Eagles is upset, I'm going to be like, what? You're upset that I said a good player? You thought he was a good player?
You got to get this running on Philly Sports Radio. Yeah. See if there's some fallout there.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think, the thing is, too, they're fine on the offensive line. So if it was, you know, a quarterback or any other number of things, maybe that would be a problem. But I don't think this is exactly, it shouldn't rock anybody in Philadelphia.
The funny thing is, like, you're right. Like, obviously the Eagles have been really good with that. But, like, Titans fans also are like, my God, they thought Andre Dillard was good. Are we sure that they know what they're doing?
You know,
they do.
Here's the thing about Dillard, though. People want to be, like, have revisionist history on that guy. A lot of teams loved him. Like, he didn't work out, but especially as a past tactician and what he brought to the table, you know, from a tool standpoint in the passing game, there was like an overwhelming number of NFL teams were in love with him. But I also think there was a time too with Andre Dillard where we were entering into a phase. I would say Dillard was probably, you know, we were into it at that point, but he was a very good example of it where NFL teams were becoming acquainted with, hey, these guys don't know how to play offensive tackle in every single phase. And we have to, you know, teams started to realize we have to be far more careful about this idea of taking, you know, toolsy pass, pass blocking offensive linemen, because they may not have what it takes to be, you know, a run blocking lineman, or they may not have these other sort of mentality traits to round out and be complete offensive linemen, or they just don't have the reps that look like normal offensive reps in the NFL. And I think, you know, Dillard was one of those guys where, you know, there were just a few missing pieces, and then it didn't, it was, obvious pretty quickly that, oh, there's some missing stuff here that's not going to be easy to ultimately develop. But, you know, yeah, we look back because Dillard, you know, ended up being a bust. But, again, I remember that draft, and teams loved him up and down, you know, that first round. So he's I don't want to let anybody off the hook on that one. That was definitely one where plenty of teams would have missed on him.
Hey, Andre Dillard's still turning it out up there in Green Bay, baby. It's gonna be a breakout year for him.
You know, he's still in the league, right? He's still in the, and that's the funny thing too, is it shows you at least athletically what he brought to the table, that he continues to get chances over and over, and you know, it just hasn't worked, and yet that shows you that, I don't want to say desperation, but teams need offensive linemen, and anyone who's got any skill set they bring to the table that is even modestly attractive and makes them, you know, at worst a depth tackle, they'll last a long time. I'll bet you that guy will be in the league. I mean, he may run the typical upside first round career length. I mean, he could be in the league a dozen years by the time it's over. And then at that point, I don't want to say you
tip the cap
draft
is what
picks,
you do. You tip the cap.
Well, yeah. Let's be real here. Like, I've had this argument with people before about, like, what is a quote unquote failed draft pick? Sure, he didn't live up to his first round expectations, but I'm going to tell you right now, any player who lasts in the league 10 years or 12 years, that's not a busted. I mean, maybe they didn't live up to the ceiling that people had on them, but if you last that long in the NFL, you were a pretty good pick, because players don't last that long. It just doesn't happen. You have to have some element of talent or addition that you brought to the table. And I defy anybody to tell me that a 10-year NFL player was a bad pick. Maybe they didn't reach upside, but they were not a bad choice in terms of knowing that they were an NFL talent.
Okay, we can scream about this later.
Okay, I didn't realize that was going to be a fighting point. But I once had a
If you're
long
bad for 10 years, you were not a good pick, Charles.
You know what? If you can last in the NFL 10 years, I guarantee your bank account tells you aren't a bad
That's true. That is true. That's
fair.
Matthew Judon traded from the Patriots to the Falcons. Is Atlanta the clear favorite in your mind in the NFC South?
Yeah, and I liked them even before this pick, but I really love this move because, you know, it was low cost, and it's, you know, Judon is at an age where you're like, what's really the window? It's, you know, the high side of the window is probably a couple of years where they feel like he can still give you high-level production. I think, you know, he's a really good mentality player. Like, he brings a lot to your practice. You know, I think he's good in a locker room in terms of, especially, you know, if he's happy with the money and, you know, where his contract is. Like, he's never heard of him being a bad teammate. But to me, for the Falcons, it signals, you know, after the Penix pick, everyone's confused because they're like, you're in the window now. Like, why aren't you doing these things now? Why didn't you go get a defensive player? Well, guess what they just did? They went and got a defensive player who, by the way, I'm going to tell you, at least out of the box in 2024, is going to be as good as any defensive player they would have drafted at that choice where they ultimately took Penix. So they kind of double dipped on this one. They and, you know, I'm not going to say that was the grand plan, but they seized on it when they saw the opportunity to go and get the pass rusher they needed. And they spent, you know, what was the third round pick? Am I right there?
Yep.
Third round pick for him.
Yep.
You know, much cheaper. Now, granted, it's a shorter window, but you know, I like it a lot for them. And I already thought, especially after being in their camp and seeing their offense, at least offensively, you know, that was the team I really loved in the NFC South. I think this is a really big addition for them. They needed this piece. They did not get it in the draft, and ultimately they resolved it anyway. So, you know, a feather in their cap, and it's setting up nicely for them the way they've kind of planned out the next, you know, couple of years around Kirk Cousins.
Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Thursday morning at 8:00. Charles, thanks as always, my friend. We'll talk to you next week, and enjoy the training camp tour that continues on, my friend.
Get home at some point.
Yeah, at some point I got to go home. So I don't know. I don't, I'll I'll figure it out from here. You guys, is there anything I can do for you here in Cleveland?
Yeah, get Jameis Winston's autograph for Robbie. He wants Jameis Winston's autograph.
Get Jameis Winston's autograph. Get him mic'd up at all times and say hello to our dear friend Mike Vrabel.
He really is. Like, Jameis is really the weirdest. Like, it's just, it's so hard to explain this guy. He will be the quintessential. We talk about, like, whether or not someone's a busted draft pick. If he wants to be in the NFL 15 years, he will be in the NFL 15 years. People will keep signing him because he's, especially at the backup quarterback position, he has more talent at his fingertips than most other backup quarterbacks, but he is, I have never seen him go into an organization and the organization not be like, everybody loves this guy. Like,
there you go.
Every staffer, every player, every, it does not matter who it is. It's one of the most, like, interesting things given how his NFL career started.
He's a leader, baby.
Hey, no, he's amazing. Also, if Vrabel asks what I'm doing with my hands, tell him I'm throwing up double middles from Nashville. Just kidding.
Yeah. I will bring up the fact that I'm getting roasted for my take that he was worth a couple first round picks.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure is that.
Hey, Mike, you think you could fetch a six?
Thank you, Charles.
See you, man.
There you go.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. Lots that Charles had to say there. We'll react to that coming up next. A lot of Andre Dillard talked here, too, which I always enjoy.
What a fine day. We've had Andre Dillard and Vic Beasley today on the program.
Yes, we have.
You just never know.
Yes, we have. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.